Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Buckhead Business Radio Show.
All right, folks, it's that time once again. It's the most exciting part of the week, at least for me. It's Buckhead Business Radio. It's our show this morning. I'm Rich Casanova, your host, and we have another amazing lineup. I don't know how we do this every week. We bring in the most amazing people. We scour all through Atlanta and Buckhead, and now we brought them here to our studio. And so we're excited to introduce. Let's just say hi to some of the folks here in the studio. First, Will Gear is joining us. Will, how are you this morning?
I am wonderful. How are you doing?
Unbelievable. I don't know if I just topped you or not. Yeah. Looking great. And we chatted on the phone yesterday. And so welcome to the studio. Look forward to the conversation. We're going to talk about at least some of the hot buttons to me, but forensic accounting.
Yes, that's
maybe,
correct.
Right? And business evaluation?
Business evaluation and a little bit of litigation that's involved in
it. That's going to be good stuff, whatever, yeah. We're not being litigated. Are we? There's no issues right now, right?
Well, it depends on what you say.
Let's see how it goes, whatever, yeah. Okay, and also joining us in the studio is Kevin O'Malley. Kevin, how are you this morning?
Great, good morning.
Yeah, first time in the studio. We've been knowing each other for a while, yeah.
Excited to be here.
I've been to a few of your events, and you're going to be talking about that happening at ATV, right?
Absolutely, looking forward to it.
And you're the B2B guy, right?
That's right.
Nice.
B2B,
yeah.
Kevin.
That's nice,
right.
There you go. That's one of your Twitter handles, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Nice. Okay, and also joining us in the studio is Loretta Lepore. Loretta, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
And I love the color you're wearing. Oh, it is radio. I don't know why I mentioned the color of your beautiful jacket, but it is almost our Radio X color. Our Radio X, yeah, you did that on purpose.
I did, totally on purpose. Always know your audience nice before you show up.
Right, well done. And because we have a mutual friend, Wendy, and
so
she's been here a couple of times, and you have some exciting updates and news going on with your business with
Media Bar.
Nice, yeah.
Media Bar. Media
Perfect.
Training.
But there's no alcohol being served for legal reasons. We have to state that, right?
That's
just
correct.
A media bar. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. And then finally, Loretta Lepore is joining us this morning and will be tuning in. And let's introduce Loretta right now. We just said hi to Loretta. I'm sorry. Erica Danilchek. All right. Is that good? Did
That's
I get it close
great.
Enough?
Yeah. That's great. Good morning.
Okay. And what threw me off, you're also wearing red. I don't know why the guys didn't wear red or whatever. Yeah.
I got a little red
okay,
in
yeah.
the shirt right here.
Nice. Yeah. Close. Yeah. Okay, so Erica, let's jump right into it and learn a little bit about yourself. First of all, you were appointed the executive director of the Buckhead Heritage Society. I'm guessing that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yes, I hope so.
All right, and that was in January 2010, and you have a Bachelor of Arts degree from Boston University. All right, Master's Heritage Preservation degree, Georgia State University. Wow. Sounds good so far. I think we should almost, what else do we need to know about your background and how did you end up here?
Well, I ended up at Buckhead Heritage after working at the Atlanta History Center for several years, and then I graduated from Georgia State from the Heritage Preservation Program, and it just seemed like the logical fit here in Buckhead to work with a fairly new organization. Yeah. It had been founded back in 2006 to identify, promote, and preserve Buckhead's historic resources, so it was right up my alley.
Yeah, well, we love anything with Buckhead or whatever, yeah, so we're excited to have you here. And so the Heritage, you said it was established and what was the motivation for the impetus behind that?
The main reason was our founding president, Wright Mitchell. The story goes he was running down Chatham Road one day. It was not his usual route, and he was taken aback by the fact that there was a vacant lot at the corner of Chatham and West Paces Ferry, and how could that be the middle of Buckhead? And curiosity got the best of him, and he climbed up over the berm there on Chatham and realized it was a historic cemetery. And a little bit of research showed that it dated back to 1870, and it was completely overgrown with ivy. You couldn't even see it from the roadway, and there's this grand obelisk right in the middle, quite compelling. And he just said, this isn't right for a community that dates back as far as it does and is rich in history and has the resources to take care of its historic resources like a cemetery like this. So he actually founded the organization, and the first project was the rehabilitation of Harmony Grove Cemetery. Okay. And if you go there now, it's, I think, one of the most beautiful spaces in all of Buckhead, and we do educational programming there, and we've restored a number of gravestones, and that it was our really our first project of the organization, and we've grown from there.
Yeah, so fast forward. So what are some other projects they've been involved in over the years?
We have done a number of advocacy projects, including the fight to preserve Mount Olive Cemetery, another burial ground right in the heart of Buckhead. It's on Far Road, adjacent to Frankie Allen Park. So if you drive into Frankie Allen Park and there's a knoll to your left-hand side, there's actually an African-American burial ground there. And a number of years ago, back taxes started to be assessed against that property by Fulton County, and the property was actually sold on the courthouse steps.
Really?
Yes, to a developer who then wanted to remove the grave so that he could develop that parcel. So Buckhead Heritage got involved, actually met one of the descendants of someone buried at the site, and our founding president, Wright Mitchell, happens to also be a lawyer, so he took the developer to court on behalf of the descendant and actually got the developer stopped in his tracks. So that parcel has been preserved, and we have done cleanup efforts there and recently repaired one of the headstones as well. And we feel like that site tells a very important story about the African-American community of Bagley Park that was there where Frankie Allen Park was.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if this is a fair question, but what's like a ballpark of what does it take in terms of, funding to do from maybe like either specifically that project or a typical, if there is a typical project, or from low end to high end? What kind of budget numbers are we talking here?
Well, there is no typical project, yeah. So it really does vary. We've probably spent well into $30,000 on Harmony Grove in terms of creating a master plan, doing headstone restoration, doing some landscape work there, including planting historically appropriate trees and that kind of thing. The site at Mount Olive, we've used a lot of volunteer work.
That was my next question is, yeah, you probably are able to incorporate a lot of volunteers as well.
Absolutely, including members of the Buckhead business community. Also, we've had students from the Atlanta International School come out to the site there at Frankie Allen Park. And when they came out, they were so fascinated by the history of that site. And we really thought it was important to tell them the history. And they were so curious. Each time they would uncover a burial feature, they would come and run up to me and say, "Erica, look what I found. What does this mean?" And to spark that kind of curiosity in students that young was really, really gratifying to me.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a history buff, and not like I can't write a book on it or anything, an expert by any means, but I thoroughly enjoy. And just hearing you, I was just visualizing that experience from the volunteer perspective. And it's like a time capsule, right? You know?
Absolutely. You know, these historic cemeteries, too, are really interesting to us because they are the sites that tell the stories from those
very early days
of Buckhead. So it's fun to come bring people out to those sites and show them some of the headstones and tell the stories of those families that are buried there.
So now tell us about y'all's involvement in the Buckhead Green Space Action Plan.
Yes.
That looks to be an exciting topic. I said that. Yeah.
Yeah. A very exciting topic. Buckhead has wonderful things coming in its future, and we were invited to be part of this green space action plan, a planning process to figure out how to add green space to City Council District 7, which is the lowest parked district in the city of Atlanta. And Howard Shook really was the impetus behind this planning process and said, we need to figure out creative ways to add green space to our City Council District. If we are going to call ourselves a world-class community,
right. You
know, we need more green space.
Yeah.
So I was asked to be part of the steering committee for that project, and quite frankly, at first I thought, well, besides knowing a little bit about our historic cemeteries, which are wonderful green spaces, not entirely sure why I'm being asked to be at the table, but curiosity got the best of me, and I said, I think I need to go and see what's going on here. And an idea kind of bubbled up through this process, which was very compelling to me, to add historic interpretation to the green spaces that we have in Buckhead and the future green spaces that are going to come on board, to make these spaces even more interesting and more compelling to our residents and to potential visitors to the community. So the idea was to add some kind of interpretation to these green spaces to tell our community story. And my organization, since we are supposed to be promoting our history, we said, well, that sounds like a logical project that we should be part of long term.
Yeah.
But how do we do it?
Right.
You know, There
and how do you define that, right, as an interpretive master plan?
There's an interpretive master plan that needs to really be done, so that's what we're working on now, because what spaces do we interpret? You know, where are the stories that we need to, what are the stories we need to tell? Where are they? How do we do it? There are communities that use all kinds of different interpretive tools, whether that's an app or signage or, you know, bicycle tours. So what are we going to do here? So we've been through this process over the past year. We've gotten a steering committee of 28 wonderful members of the community representing nonprofit groups. So the Atlanta History Center and Livable Buckhead have been involved in this planning process. Organizations from the city that were important to be a part of this process, like the Atlanta Urban Design Commission and the City Parks Department, to get their input on where we were headed, what this was going to look like. And we're going to be wrapping up that plan here over the next month. But I was very excited a couple weeks ago. We actually revealed our concept plans at the 10th annual Taste of Buckhead event at the Buckhead Theater.
Yeah.
At the BBA. They're wonderful partners of ours. Yeah. And we were excited to finally show people kind of what we've been talking about here over the last year. And we're really thinking outside of the box. It's not going to be your typical signage program. It's going to be really exhibit art in part. These exhibits will be installed in our parks and our plaza spaces here in Buckhead. And just to give you one example, and they are now on our website so the public can see, if you go to buckheadheritage.com, you can link right from the homepage and see what we're talking about. But one of the concepts is actually framed glass on the street, etched with a historic photo that would overlay a street scene and show you what that street scene or the building looked like
before. Oh, at that time,
before.
In that era. Wow.
Yes. So, like I said, they're a little bit different than what you would typically see. It's not just your standard signage. So we're very excited about the feedback that we're getting so far.
Is there any, in that plan, is there any space, or does it fit, like, for some of the, there's what's been popular a lot lately is like in-town gardens, or like a, is there a garden application where, you know, people can produce, you know, vegetables and what have you, or is that not part of y'all's?
Well, it's not really part of our effort.
But is something a partner you could team up with? Has there been any conversations to that point?
Well, I know that, for instance, the Chastain Park Conservancy has a garden that they're trying to start. So, you know, there are groups out there that are doing that right now.
Right. But not really in your sandbox or your.
Not really in my sandbox, no.
Okay. So finally, you know, you mentioned the BBA. Who are some other heritage partners or that y'all team up with?
We are actually expanding our partnership base, which is wonderful. It allows us to do so many more things. So strong partners in the Atlanta History Center, in Livable Buckhead. Livable Buckhead is actually the organization that is tasked with overseeing the expansion of green space here in Buckhead. So as we talk about the history of the community and where it makes sense to put those exhibits in the community, we're in constant conversation with Livable Buckhead. They're the ones who are really overseeing the Path 400 project right now. So we're talking about what history can be incorporated along that trail system. So we're constantly talking to them. Our logical preservation partners as well, the Atlanta Preservation Center, the Georgia Trust for Historic Preservation, our city partners, and the Buckhead Business Association, we've partnered with them several times on events over the past couple years, and we're very excited about people's interest in history.
Oh, big time, yeah. Well, it spurred some thoughts on my end or whatever. Some, you know, always learn great things being here, talking to interesting people. But so tell our listeners, what's the best way to get back in touch with you and reach out to you?
Well, a great way to find out more about the organization is our website, buckheadheritage.com. And from the homepage, you can link to all of our social media outlets. To get in touch with me directly, info@buckheadheritage.com, or you can give me a ring at 404-467-9447.
Excellent. Well, thanks for being on the show. I really enjoyed the conversation, and hopefully you hang out. Maybe we'll have some follow-up questions for you as well, maybe during a roundtable discussion. So thanks again. Now you can just relax.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Enjoy the rest of the show. All right. So up next, our next guest is from Media Bar, Loretta Lepore. And I was scanning your resume. Wow. I feel almost nervous talking to you now. Right? I mean, that's pretty impressive. I'll just hit a couple of points that jumped off the page to me, and feel free to elaborate or engage on that. So from what I'm understanding is you've been in the practice of law in a former life or still currently?
No, I worked for a law firm.
Okay,
I'm not a lawyer.
A consultant. Okay, yeah,
trade,
good,
but,
good. Yeah,
but I did work with lawyers and government affairs professionals.
Yeah, because in a lobbyist and their clients, you were appointed by Governor Sonny Perdue.
Yes.
Right. And what was involved in that?
So I served as the governor's press secretary,
okay.
And then he later appointed me as the state's marketing director at the Georgia Department of Economic Development, where my job was to promote Georgia to businesses and tourists looking to relocate to Georgia or visit.
And it says you were a primary spokesperson and chief communications liaison with the White House for the G8 summit?
Yes.
Wow.
So during Governor Perdue's term, when I was serving as a press secretary, Georgia was lucky enough to be the host for the G8 summit down at Sea Island. And I coordinated with the local authorities and their PIOs, as well as the White House planning organization, to make sure we were all synced up and ready what was a huge event.
Oh,
it also happened to be the first event on U.S. soil after 9/11.
Wow.
So there was a tremendous amount of concern about that event and making sure that everything went smoothly.
Yeah, when you have all those dignitaries in one space, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just and then finally, you were, as a former journalist yourself, worked for CNN, NPR, Westwood Radio Network.
Mm-hmm.
You're in charge of the show now. Ready, set, go. It's all yours.
Well, I did. I spent the first 18 years of my career working my way up in the media and loved every minute of it.
Yeah. So now let's jump into maybe some questions. So this idea of Media Bar, mm-hmm. Before we talk about launching it or, you know, what's behind it or how it came about, what's the premise or what's your mission there?
So what we do is we work with individuals, companies, organizations that are interested in really raising the bar, hence the name Media Bar, on their communication skills. Everybody is different. Everybody's at a different level. Some people have had training throughout their professional career, or maybe while they were in college, it was part of their curriculum. But what we do is help them take it to the next level, depending on whatever it is their intentions are, whatever they're desiring to do. So it's a customized program that can help individuals either prepare for media interviews, as this,
right.
or simply just to help them with their presentation skills. So often there are C-level executives that may have made it to the C-suite without any type of media communication, yet their job or their new job might be to do a lot of public speaking. So we'll work with them to help hone their skills in that regard as well. Sometimes, you know, they may have never even seen a teleprompter.
Right.
And now they're having to stand before one and read from one. So we can help with that as well.
That's what I need, is a teleprompter. I knew there was something
right.
missing here in the studio. Yeah. But that was always make you look a little bit smarter or sound a little bit better. But so if I could, I don't know if I can afford your services, but I'm thinking I need to maybe cut you a check before we leave here. But jump back into, so what was your idea in launching this? I mean, how did it kind of, you know, what's the backstory?
So you mentioned my partner, Wendy Garisco, early off, and Wendy and I were colleagues at CNN. Wendy, for many years, worked in CNN's booking department, booking guests there at the network for all the various programs, and I worked there in various capacities. And she had started her own consulting business and represents clients with the national media today, a variety of folks from various backgrounds. And I, on a regular basis, as a communications consultant, work with an array of businesses, helping coach them through their communications needs, and part of that is media training. And Wendy had seen through her practice a need to train lawyers in particular, that the media today, with all their coverage of the various cases, with the exponential growth of the web, there's more content that's needed, more experts that are needed, more specialized expertise. And what she was finding is that as she was representing lawyers, many of them didn't have any media training skills. It wasn't part of their training process.
Sure.
So she asked me to come in and start working with some of her clients. And so the company kind of grew organically, and then we decided to formalize it and officially launched it in 2012.
Nice. So who are some folks that seek your counsel besides lawyers, or is that still the primary focus of
Well, we work a good bit with lawyers, and we have, I should mention, been approved by the Georgia Bar Association so that they can also receive credit, continuing learning credit for the training. We also work with, as I said, business folks. There's also a demand right now for folks in the healthcare industry.
Right.
There's a lot, the media is seeking more and more to speak with them, to get their input on certain issues. But with all of the changes, the regulatory changes coming down the pike, particularly administrators within hospital organizations are being sought out to figure out how are you going to adapt to these changes. And again, here are folks that have risen through the healthcare community,
exactly.
But media was not part of their game until they got to this level.
Yeah, they're experts in their field,
exactly.
And they know their business inside and out, backwards and forwards, whatever, right? But then they could, you know, there's this angst being in front of the media. And, you know, we've all seen the horror stories of somebody that's ill-prepared.
Right.
And that's you know, top of mind to them. And
right. So
they're very hesitant. And it's unfortunate because there's an opportunity for them to get their message out there, right?
Absolutely.
Right. So talk to us about, you know, why should someone consider engaging with the media? You know, because I think maybe the knee-jerk reaction is, as guest-friendly as we are, mm-hmm. as we mentioned before the show, we are unabashedly pro-business. And we love talking to business people. There's no gotcha question. But quite often when we invite a guest, there is this, do I need my attorney here? Do I need my PR person here? You know, and so, I mean, what are some of the reservations or challenges with that?
Well, I think the media today is perceived to be somewhat confrontational for a lot of folks. You know, when you look at the tone of the discourse, there is a propensity in some instances to have a this side and a that side, you
right.
know, and ratings obviously rise when you have some form of spirited debate. And so I think for those folks that perhaps want to raise their profile, say their simple goal and objective is business development.
Right.
You know, they're a professional in any form. They may be a CPA, as we have one here today,
right.
you know, or any individual practice, and they're trying to do business development. There may be a little bit of a reticence mm-hmm. to get involved because they're thinking, hey, that looks like I'm not prepared for
right.
that.
Yeah.
But there is great opportunity to raise your visibility. It's just knowing how to do it. And we find that as we start to work with folks, they get more comfortable with
oh,
who
yeah.
they are. They get more comfortable with how the media works. That's a big part of our training, explaining to folks, this is how the media works. These are their goals and objectives.
Right.
At the end of the day, you know, this is what these folks are tasked to do. And you know what? At 6 o'clock, they want to go home to their kid's soccer game too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they're not bad people. And people start to relax into it. And become very comfortable with then going out and pursuing whatever it is their goal is.
Yeah, it's probably just a lot about posturing and just having that confidence. If you have a coach or somebody that knows and about expectations too, right? So
right.
a lot of it is just caught off guard. And if you're prepared, you're going to be more confident, more comfortable.
Well, caught off guard is a big
yeah.
piece, because there are some professions clearly where people get caught off guard. So we work quite a bit with trial lawyers,
right?
You know, and they're walking out of the courtroom, and there's a gaggle of reporters
oh, yeah, yeah.
there, and they may know their stuff. You know, they know exactly what they need to say. They've been trying the case. They're they know the content in and out, but they don't know where to look. I've got 5 cameras staring at me.
Right.
I've got, 20 microphones. Who do I talk to? How do I handle the situation? So oftentimes they may be very coherent and articulate in their presentation, but they look like a deer in headlights.
Right.
And just simply walking them through, this is how you need to do it. This is how where you need to be looking. This is what your body posture should be. It changes their whole demeanor and consequently makes them much more credible with the media.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had someone in a while back, and they were saying when they were on TV, they were coached not to basically blink their eyes, you know, and just maintain focus. And it felt really awkward.
Right.
They said, if you're moving around, it looks odd on TV, and you don't think about these things as just an average, civilian, if you will. But so how do your clients know which media outlets are, are good fit for their message, right? Because, they get called by a PR firm or a company, and it's like, all press is good press, so let's jump on board, right? But how do you delineate?
Right. So we really work with them to narrow the scope. So based on their expertise, where they're comfortable, someone may be a perfect candidate for print media mm-hmm. and be comfortable in that space. Somebody may be totally comfortable with radio,
yeah.
but has no desire to be on television.
Right, yeah.
You know, so we work with individuals to kind of figure out where their comfort level lies. And then we also work based on their expertise. So if we are, for example, working with somebody who has a financial services background. So we worked with a lawyer, for example, who did have both a financial services background. His expertise was in derivatives. And he was a lawyer at one of the law schools in New York. And so he had a diverse ability of where we could place him, or Wendy could work to place him with the media. But he really wanted to focus on the financial services sector. So we looked for outlets like the Financial Times or Bloomberg News or Neil Cavuto on Fox. And we really help shape that and shape their brand based on what they're aspiring to do and what their goals and objectives are again.
So where's the balance, or is it more in the area of coaching and working with clients, or is it, do you also, then find press and media as a typical PR firm or agency as well? Or,
you know, some of our clients come to us both ways. Some come directly to Wendy because they have a desire to be out there for one reason or another.
Okay.
They want to get some exposure, or perhaps they have a particular interest on a topic that's in the news. So when the gun bill was
right
here in Georgia, and then there was a national discussion about gun rights and gun ownership, there were some experts that felt that they had a tremendous amount of information that would be very valuable to the general public on both security and safety and how to use weapons, as well as what are our constitutional rights and what does the law actually say
right
about gun ownership. And so, you know, those folks felt like they could contribute, yet again, they didn't have any media training, so we trained them, and then Wendy placed them with various news organizations to talk through their expertise. And then sometimes folks come to me
right
because they want media training, or they're trying to grow their business practice.
Right.
And then consequently, I'll say, you know, they'll want to do more.
Right.
So then Wendy takes it over from there.
That's awesome. So, as I'm listening, I'm thinking of some examples of these people that were not prepared, or they, I'm thinking back to, well, currently with all the attention to the sports,
mm-hmm,
you know, all of the goings on in all the different sports, you know, basketball and football, without getting into all the minutia there. But some of those people were definitely not prepared. But even going back to Paula Deen, that was
right
just a horrible scenario, whatever, right?
Right.
I mean, and it's amazing, just a slip up without, you know, thinking it through, a brand that's been, you know, around for so long. So talk to this question, is that about what you say is important as how you say it? I mean, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I believe, you know, some folks say, you know, what you say isn't as important as how you say it, but I believe that both are
okay
equally important. And for just those reasons that you mentioned, you know, you have to be factually correct. You have to have all the information. And I think sometimes, as you mentioned in, you know, the sports arena,
right,
with high profile celebrities, whatever the reason is for why they come out initially like they do, they're ill-advised if they do not have all of the facts before heading out
right
to the microphone
yeah
and be willing to be as transparent as possible, because people will perceive
yep
that there is something. They may not know exactly what it is,
yeah,
but the public and the media will perceive something's not right there,
yeah, yeah,
something's
yeah
missing there. And so it's very important that you have all of your facts checked out, and that you're willing to step out there and share as much as possible, particularly in a crisis situation.
Yeah, right.
So I do a lot of work with crisis and issues management, and really work a lot with the attorneys in that space. And, you know, that's one of the things that I always counsel clients to do, is when you're in a crisis situation, you have to gather as much information as possible and put it out all at the beginning. So one of the examples I use now is, you look at the NFL,
yeah,
you know, and it was piecemeal,
right,
little bits of information. You can't go back and correct in the media, unfortunately.
Right.
You can't go back and turn the clock back.
Exactly.
What's out there is out there. And now with the advent of, you know, social media and this, that, it lives forever, and it's
yeah
viral and pervasive. And so now more than ever, it is imperative that people that are out public speaking in any way,
right,
because as we've seen, even in the political realm, you may not think you're speaking to the public. You may think you're in a private room having a nice little conversation with some folks that are friends of yours, and somebody's recording it.
Well, everybody that has a cell phone now is in the media business.
Exactly.
So, I mean, the guy at Florida State, the quarterback, I mean, he wasn't in front of the media, so to speak, but he made an inappropriate statement in front of people.
Exactly.
And you can't, in this day and age, you can't think that that's not going to, you know, especially if you're high or semi or medium profile, you know, it's going to surface up. So before we kind of wrap up the segment and tell our listeners about how to get in touch, Tell us, I don't know if this is a fair question again, but in terms of training, what does that look like without getting into all the minutiae and giving away too many secrets or whatever, mm-hmm. but does that involve some role playing, or you do some video or some audio recording and practicing, or is it more kind of one-on-one, and is there a course, or is it an individual
right.
basis?
So typically we work one-on-one with clients. Okay. That's not exclusive. We can certainly work yeah. with more than that, but typically we work one-on-one with clients. It's about a 6-hour program, broken up over 2 days.
Okay.
And the first day we spend some time with the person, getting to know them, figuring out what their goals and objectives are. And one of the things when you speak to what is a person's credibility, it's really who they are,
right.
and really kind of figuring all of that out. And then we'll talk about how the media works and what are some of the expectations of being a media guest and so forth. And the next day we'll come back. It's a lot of intake for folks the
yeah,
first day,
right,
as
exactly.
you might imagine,
absorb
especially
it, yeah.
somebody who has never been through the process. The second day we'll come back and we will actually do mock interviews, and
yeah.
we'll go over and over until they get comfortable. Yeah. And we'll point out things that, oftentimes they're not even aware that they do.
Right.
Or noises they make when they're speaking that they are totally unaware of until you point it out. And it can really change somebody's, presententation.
I think you're making our other guests a little nervous. Whatever.
Yeah, but I have to follow this one.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm feeling nervous, whatever. Yeah. But but if you don't kind of self-evaluate, you're not going to move forward, right?
In absolutely. Any, yeah. I mean, we had a client and well-versed, well-educated, spoke publicly all the time, but he had just this little click when he spoke publicly, not in person, but publicly. And
that's
I was
weird.
Watching through all of his recordings and before I met with him, and I sat down and I said, okay, let's take a look at some of your public speaking engagements and some of your prior media engagements and talk through what you like about that, what you felt comfortable with, and where you think you need to improve before we start anything else. Let's do kind of a level set. And we did that. And I said, now the sound that you make, he goes, what sound?
Yeah, right. Here's the playback.
It was just a vocal trait that he had that came across when he was doing public speaking.
Well, it's like these singers from around the world, right? I mean, they have, when they're talking, there's when they get up on stage and start singing, there's no accent. I've never
right,
understood
right,
that, but yeah.
Right.
So tell our listeners, what's the best way to reach out and contact y'all?
Sure.
Find out
so
more.
Our website is mediabarservices.com, and we have a list of services on there. The program is customized, so we can put together whatever it is you like. My email is loretta@mediabarservices.com, and my phone number is 404-402-2647.
Excellent. Well, it was a pleasure meeting you in person and having a conversation. And I feel like I've learned a lot, and I have some homework now to do as well, right? Right. So hang out. There may be some follow-up questions, but thanks again for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Very
appreciate
enjoyable.
It.
And so up next, Kevin O'Malley is here in the studio.
You?
Unbelievable.
Great to follow that. I'm
right?
sure
I know,
I'll be...
Right?
Judged or
yeah, exactly, yeah.
Coached.
We'll just ask Loretta to leave the studio momentarily during this
right.
interview segment. Yeah,
that's right.
Okay, so Kevin, tell us a little bit about yourself. We've met a few times at Atlanta Tech Village, and I've been to the event we're going to be talking about, the B2B camp. But tell us your backstory. How
sure.
did you originally from Atlanta before? What's the life before B2B?
I was born in Norwalk. No, I won't start there.
Right, yeah. As a small child or whatever. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Actually, I went up to school in Boston,
okay.
Right across the river, the town near Boston University.
Okay.
But I graduated from Northeastern and ventured down to Atlanta in the late 90s when the internet craze was happening.
Right.
And Atlanta was the place to be. So I ventured down here and worked my way through marketing and product management and held several positions in both, and most recently heading up marketing for a mobile app company called Catavault up in Alpharetta.
Yeah, yeah. I know we were talking about that beforehand, and I think we need to have you back just for a segment on that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and we're actually going to have some folks in from ATV on a December Spotlight episode show,
episode.
So there's always great things happening there.
Yeah.
And so B2B Camp. I went to the first one. I don't know. Well, how many? How this is third or fourth year now?
Yeah, this is our third year and
okay.
fourth one here in Atlanta.
So I've been to two out of the four, I guess, now.
Yeah, you're a veteran, alumni.
There you go. Nice. Yeah. I have a couple of T-shirts as well. Yeah,
that's right. That's when you know how many B2B camps right, you've been, how many T-shirts you have.
So for the folks that haven't been there, I mean, tell us a little bit about what is B2B camp?
B2B camp came from, as I'm a practitioner in marketing and sort of networking with my peers, we sort of sat around talking about some of the frustrations that Atlanta community had around connecting with people that were about modern marketing. So at the time, Pardot, which was right around the corner here, was just exploding and people were adopting that technology, but the skills weren't keeping up with this new technology. And so it was very difficult for us to find people that had like interest around marketing automation, search engine optimization, data analytics. So we searched and we really weren't satisfied with the community that Atlanta was offering at the time. And so we started B2B Camp to really be the intersection of modern B2B marketing and sales. And so where people with like-minded interest around these topics, around sales prospecting and sort of you hear terms like sales 2.0 or sales automation optimization, right. So all these great exactly. buzzwords. Right. B2B Camp really strives to bring those people together.
Yeah, you mentioned some of those platforms. Salesforce, where does that fit in the mix? Salesforce.com.
Yeah, Salesforce.com is in a lot of times center of a lot of people's ecosystems when they're building. And for example, since I'm a practitioner, I'll give you some of the examples. At Catavault, we use about 20 different software tools a day just to market and sell. So you really have to have a infrastructure to weave these tools together to maximize the use of them. And it also means that you also have 20 different skills that you need to build across your team. So as someone heading up marketing or someone as a running operations, there's a lot of things you need to learn and understand.
So you need 20 different people? Or I mean, it sounds like a lot to manage.
Amazing the amount of specialty that's happening in marketing today. And anywhere from being an expert in writing blogs and writing them in a way that they are found on the search engine to writing a compelling, engaging content. Ebooks and all the different formats, webinars, podcasts, all different types of content format that you really need to learn and know how to maximize.
Yeah, speaking of podcasts and our show, we haven't really leveraged this opportunity. Yeah. Maybe I can get some coaching after the show here.
Yeah,
but thought about taking all of our archive shows and their services that will transcribe them, and then you can take all that content and then post it as blogs or whatever, right?
Is that logical? The big thing right now is around repurposing. So a lot of content's being developed. Inside Sales does a great job of this. They'll do a one-hour webinar on a topic, and then they'll take that topic and reformat, repurpose it in all different ways so that their audience can find it in different way, different formats and smaller and bigger.
Well, a little bit selfish, but as an example for our listeners and folks here. So if you were to coach someone on their appearance on Business Radio X, give a couple of quick examples. How would they repurpose? We mentioned a couple, but are those the
Pretty
much the go-tos?
So what example would be to take a podcast and you can turn it into an audio. There's organizations like Rev.com that will turn it into a transcript. Then you can turn that into a blog post.
Right.
And then use that as a way to distribute what happened on the station that day. And then you can turn that into an email. An e-book. All sorts of ways to repurpose content. And that's really around why B2B Camp is serving an opportunity there. Is to get these people together around these topics.
Well, those are phenomenal examples or whatever, and I appreciate you giving those pointers and tips, not just myself, but listeners, because they're thinking, again, to repurpose their audio. But so B2B Camp, who should go? I mean, who's your audience or who's...
Absolutely. Anybody that's in the B2B marketing and sales arena that is either has been in the sort of modern side of marketing for years and trying to better their skills, but a lot of the audience is being asked to do these things, but not necessarily with the confidence to know how to do them. So they're looking for best practices and tips on how to apply, learn something on Saturday, because the event's on a Saturday, and apply it on Monday. And that is where we've seen a common thread across all of our great content, is people love to take something away and put it to work.
Yeah. I know the last one I went to, yeah, it is just like not only the speakers and the topics, but the networking and the energy. I mean, it's just, it's one of my favorite events. But so what's different this year? What are you going to, an extra spin or something?
Yeah. Well, you know, we're always keeping it different at B2B Camp. And there's certainly a lot of different things where I call it the upgrade of B2B Camp. And a few things that we're doing differently. One is it's at a different location. We've been at downtown GTRI for a number of years. A great location, but they're also a very popular location. So even Saturdays getting an event there is very difficult.
Wow.
So we're moving on up to Buckhead.
Okay.
We're going to be at ATV.
Nice.
And they've got done a great job there to build out a facility that fits 175 people.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're really excited about upgrading our location here in Buckhead. And the other thing that's different is our content, which is really unique about B2B Camp, is that it's an unconference. So it's all participant led. So the audience decides on what sessions are going to be held that day.
Right.
So it's a really, you've been part of it, so you know the...
That was the first time I ever experienced the unconference, and I thought it just captivated my attention. I've told the story a bunch of times to different people, like, have you ever been to an unconference? I felt like I was the insider or whatever, right? But it's kind of cool. The premise is you have all the speakers up there, and then they get to kind of, you know, give their pitch, and then you get to vote, and then go to the breakoff session, if you will, of the one that most interests you.
Yeah, it's a great way to, because what we see is people want to take control over their experience, you know, online. They want to read the content before they contact a salesperson. So, you know, we try to give that same experience in the way we do the event. So one of the things that we're doing differently here, because we had 40 people pitch last year for 16 spots. So
oh, my God.
The competition is pretty fierce for the topics.
Yeah.
So there, it's also a little bit overwhelming for the audience to, to process 40 different ideas in 30-second increments. So what we're going to do differently this year is we're actually going to do it before the event. And so we have, we're building out the site right now. It'll be out soon here that allows the people that want to pitch a session to go online. They'll fill out a session pitch, but they'll also be able to post videos and, past presentations. So we're trying to drive the engagement before the event.
Yeah, because a lot of times there's good content, but then the delivery, the speaker, you know, doesn't really engage the audience.
That's
and
right.
So you kind of want to, you know, you want that mix or that balance, right, of hot topic that you're interested in.
That's right.
But you want it presented in an engaging experience that you're going to have that takeaway.
Yeah.
So you talked about Saturday. When's the date? When's
November 8th.
Okay.
Saturday, November 8th at 7:30.
A.M. Really?
Well, we
good luck on that, Kevin.
We serve a cold breakfast.
Yeah, so, and is it octane?
Yes, we're going to be loading them up with caffeine.
Right.
The one thing about Saturday is it really brings out the people that are passionate.
Yeah, that's true.
About
this
topic,
that's
because they're foregoing their morning,
ritual.
Saturday morning
sleep
rituals.
In, yeah,
that's right. Yeah,
it's mostly involves just sleeping
in. It's a committed group.
I know. Years ago, when I was at FSU, I was a member of Toastmasters, and it was Saturday mornings as a college student, and I went there religiously every Saturday. Yeah. And it is. It kind of like delineates the serious from the amateurs.
And we do get a lot of people say, oh, when can you do it during the week? We've looked at it, but
I like the idea.
The diehards love Saturday.
There's no distractions.
That's
from,
right. Yeah. That's right.
So what's the time frame? How many hours and how many people you expect?
Yeah, so we're expecting 175. We're, we're aiming for 175 with B2B Camp. You never know.
Yep.
So, but we're
so
here
it starts
today.
At 7:30 till when?
7:30 to 4.
Okay, cool.
And we try to get everybody out of there so they can catch the early...
The games.
Yeah, the late afternoon football games.
Nice.
Yeah.
So so how would someone participate in the event?
What's There's that? A lot of ways to participate. First thing is, you know, that we're... since the content is driven by participants, it's getting people to pitch topics. So if there are people out there thinking about topics to choose from, we're going to be out there talking about it online, posting some blogs about what topics we're looking for, but we're certainly looking for people talking about content marketing, sales prospecting, search engine optimization, so all of the various modern marketing techniques and sales techniques that were out there.
So that's a pretty good strategy. So you have the folks that are pitching, they're probably obviously then pushing that out to their social media and encouraging the votes or whatever, so then they're going to...
It's a personal brand platform. I mean, really give the opportunity for people that are in companies that have a day job, like myself, that I have a lot to share, and we provide them the platform to share that story.
Okay. So you can't really announce some of the speakers because that's being, you know, voted upon, right?
Yeah. Nice. Everyone's a speaker.
Right,
everyone's got an opportunity at B2B Camp.
Yeah. I'll throw my hat in the ring there.
Please
yeah.
do. Please do.
So, So what's the cost? Are there sponsorship opportunities? Or tell us some of the numbers.
Great. Thanks for asking that. Yeah. So one of the major changes this year is we're charging. For the previous years, it's been a free event, and really nothing comes free. So particularly with the upgrade of the facility and some of the technology we're using, we're trying to invest back into B2B Camp and make sure that the experience that you get out of it is valued. Certainly, we value your time to attend the event, but you're going to get a 8-hour event with 12 sessions to choose from. So it's the t-shirt, the giveaways, the free lunch.
The lunch, right?
Is included, right?
Yeah, I never knew how you guys did that, because I had a couple buddies go, and we went, and it was like, what's the catch here or whatever? There's no pitch or, it was just,
Well,
so it seemed logical, you need to charge or whatever. I wasn't going to suggest it, but.
Well, we've asked people every year in the survey, how much would you pay for this? And we get, I'd say the average has been around $200 to $300 to the value that they put on the event. We're charging $99 to come to the event, and today actually is the last day for early bird. The procrastinators will have to pay. So certainly take advantage of the early bird.
Sounds good to me. So so remind us again the website and how do people
check it out on www.b2bcamp.com. You can also find us on Twitter at b2bcamp. And we'll certainly be out there talking about it in the coming weeks, about the content, keeping people up to date. Keynote will probably be the next upcoming announcement. So stay tuned.
Nice. Yeah. Definitely look forward to that. And we're Ryan here in the studio has been tweeting and putting out some social media, and we'll continue to get the word out as well on that. So
appreciate that.
Thanks for being here,
thanks
Kevin.
Thanks for having me here.
Absolutely. It was awesome. All right. So up next, as we were saying earlier, our anchor man is joining us in the studio. So Will Gear, you're the founding partner of Galloway Gear LLC.
That's correct.
All right. Certified public accountant. And we were talking earlier about some topics we might touch on here. But tell us a little about your background. What, how did you begin your career and your backstory, I guess? Yeah.
Well, first, let me say that I didn't know you were an FSU grad as well.
Okay. Is that good or bad?
That is good. Okay, I went to FSU, 87-91.
Nice.
And also, let me say hello to a friend that is listening right now, Alton Darby.
Okay.
He has texted me while we were in here. My background began at FSU. I started there and then got an MBA, and shortly thereafter went to work for a regional accounting firm doing public accounting work.
Nice, nice. And so we were talking, just beforehand of some of the topics we could touch on. And on my short list is this idea of business valuation, because I think that's kind of like a to the average business person. Do they tend to overestimate the value of their business? Kind of like when you're selling your house, you think, it's the best house on the block, but also like it's a bit of a mystery, like, cause housing's pretty straightforward. Being into a business, what's the process? Or,
well, most people, when they get ready to sell their business, they are, probably not thought about it long enough. They just say, okay, I'm ready to sell my business. It's time.
Right.
But there's a lot that should go into the planning, and the goal you want to set to be able to sell your business. Valuing a business, that's a difficult concept. Many people have different ideas about what the value of the business is, and most of the time, the owners or the sellers of the business do overvalue their business.
Right.
I mean, it's a common, you were the one that started the business, you were the one that had the idea, you put all the sweat, equity into it, mm-hmm. so it's hard to get a realization to them sometimes of what that's worth. What is it worth? It's what somebody will pay for that business.
Yeah, because it's your baby. You're very passionate and emotional about it, and the outsider is just looking to make a profit and generate some revenue. And what's this thing of like a 3-to-1 ratio, right? Is that still come into play? Or?
Well, what a seller has to remember is that a buyer is looking at what they can get from the business when they buy it, the cash flow.
Right.
That's usually why you buy a business. What amount of cash flow? And when you're talking about a multiple, I assume, of a 3.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's a broad range. It just depends on the type of risk that goes with the business, and that's where those multiples will come from when you're valuing a business. Typically, I see businesses that are in the range of anywhere from 3 to 7, just depending on how much growth they expect to take place in the business.
And like anything else, it's all about timing as well. And the industry is on an upswing. And going back to kind of the house analogy, right? Like staging, when you try to sell a house, you try to stage it. So do you coach folks to kind of clean up their business? Obviously, they get all their books in order. And
that is the hardest part right there, to get a business owner just to realize that, hey, you're not just going to wake up today and decide to sell your business. It's something that you need to start probably a 2-year plan.
Wow. That's what I was going to ask you. Like, I was thinking 6 months, but because
now that depends. It depends on how well you've run your business, what state your financial statements are in, the internal controls that are in the business. I mean, you just have to take a look at it. It's not every business needs 2 years, but a lot of the smaller businesses, those are the guys that need to start probably 2 years out. It's almost like window dressing to the business to make things look better that are really the underlying numbers and the foundation there supports what somebody might be willing to pay for that business.
Right. And it's probably a good investment if it's a year or 2 years to generate a much greater return, right?
That's right. One of the common things that I see with business owners is that they have these ideas that, oh, yeah, it may be doing X right now, but it's going to, in the next couple of years, it's just going to
explode.
Explode. You can't sell that to a buyer. You just can't get them to buy into that unless you've got the historical support for that.
Right. Unless you're an amazing salesperson, right? But so go back to before we get into some of the other specialties of your firm, your background as a CPA, I mean, is it a typical practice or you do the traditional CPAs operation as well? Or
I wear many different hats. Okay. We have a traditional practice, which most people, when they think of a CPA practice, that's tax, audit work, financial statements, things of that nature. But I also jump into another realm, and that's the area of business valuation, economic damages. I've testified as an expert witness quite a few times in litigation matters. So my spectrum of where I work is pretty broad.
What's an example of a case? I know you can't mention a specific case, but a case where you'd be called to testify.
Most of the cases obviously are about money when they call me.
Yeah.
But you'd be surprised. I have testified in murder trials. I have testified, wow. A lot of divorces, and they're divorces, they're domestic disputes, or they are divorces that are related to business divorces. The interesting thing about the murder trial is that I had known the alleged person that was being accused at that time. Yeah, it was quite interesting. That was many years back.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought we were talking about forensic accounting, but there was some forensic
accounting that went into this because there was money involved in the motive and those type of things, and that's how I got involved in that.
Yeah.
Most recently, I've got a case coming up, and I'll be out in San Francisco next week to testify in a case.
Wow.
I can't really talk about that one, but
we'll have to have you back for that one.
Sure.
Nice. So, economic damages, elaborate on that a little bit. I'm just trying to,
Well, business loss or the value of a business kind of relates to economic damages. It just depends on the situation. You can have an individual that's possibly, has
embezzling or something.
Well, when I think of economic damages, it's some type of, activity that the lawyers refer to as a tort, where somebody sues and they say, look, you've caused me to lose all types of money. It could be a patent infringement. It could be a violation of a contract agreement, something of that nature. Okay. And they hire us to come in and calculate what those damages were to the company that was hurt in the situation.
So they can kind of justify it,
That's correct.
Right. Yeah. So forensic accounting, I've always been a little bit intrigued by this. So in a day-to-day or typical scenario, what are some examples of where that comes into play in the benefit of having someone with that experience?
Well, many people ask me what forensic accounting is, and the best term in to try to use a few words is investigative accounting.
Okay.
That's a situation where you're going to go turn over every rock and look at everything possible because you're looking for the needle in the haystack many times. Could be a fraud situation, could be to find where the money actually went. The situations are broad. I mean, many times when we are hired to do business valuations or economic damages, what the parties that hire us don't realize is that we're going to have to do some level of forensic accounting to support the economic damage calculations or the business valuation.
Right. Not to put you on the spot here, whatever, so you can pass or play on this one here, but I'm just, it's love stories. So is there a story that comes to mind without mentioning any of the parties involved maybe, but a type of business that, and where it had a great outcome, from utilizing your services, I guess, or?
Oh.
So I did put you on the spot. Yeah. Nice job, Rich. Yeah. See, I don't have any media coaching or whatever. Yeah. If I talked to Loretta, we would never have this conversation. Yeah.
Well, you have to be careful there.
Yeah. Yeah.
With some of that. But I tell you what, I will share this with you.
Okay.
You know, and this comes with Loretta, and we were talking before we came in here, to me, the most fulfilling part of my job is if I can't advocate a client, okay. but I can advocate my position that I'm particularly taking on a matter.
Right.
And in advocating that position, I am more than likely going to stand up or be in the witness box in front of 12 jurors.
Wow.
That are going to decide whether what I'm saying to them is credible, yeah. whether it's believable. And what's important to me is, do they believe me? Can yeah. I get them to buy the information that I am trying to convey to them? And when you don't get that, you feel like a failure. But when yeah. you do, it is very rewarding in many ways.
Yeah.
So not only do you have to be a good accountant, CPA, or forensic accountant, if you will, you've got to be able to come across to those people that you're talking to. And believe it or not, I will admit that I probably had witnesses on the other side that were much smarter than me. But when it comes down to it and being in front of 12 jurors, it's not necessarily about how smart you are.
Yeah, because you could both be holding the same amount of facts in your hand, right?
Exactly.
And but it's how you present and being that posturing yourself to be, like you said, convincing that you know your stuff and also that you're confident. That because you see people kind of waver and they're kind of hesitating and they're not really believing what they're communicating, and that there's no question that comes
across.
They're not
personable, or yeah. it's not that they aren't credible. You can have two credible witnesses.
Right, yeah. They just don't have the skills.
And, you look across the table and you look at one or the other and you say, well, I just like that guy better.
Yeah, right, yeah. Likeability factor. Exactly, you can't deny that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And when you're hiring an attorney that's going to represent you, you want to have a likable attorney.
Right, yeah.
Many people think they want to get the bulldog, but that's not necessarily the case.
It all depends, whatever, yeah. So you mentioned a little bit earlier, but are there any of the craziest matters that you've been asked to work for that you've passed or hesitated or been engaged in?
I'll tell you a couple here.
All right.
The divorces, they can really get a little bizarre.
Right.
Some of the things.
Some of those movies. What was that old movie?
Romancing the Stone.
There you go. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm not going to go into too much detail. Right. It's usually not the part that I'm involved in that gets crazy, but I'm always told about it,
Right.
Whether it's pictures or girlfriends or whatever may be. But the strangest case that I got involved in that I actually did decline was a case where the attorney was calling me out of Puerto Rico, San Juan, Puerto Rico, and asking him, I said, why are you calling me?
Yeah.
He said, well, I have this guy, and he began to tell me, and I think either my light bulb went off or went out, whichever one. He told me that the guy was at a resort and got hit in the head with a coconut. And so he wanted me to value the loss of pleasure in life, such as the loss of consortium with his wife and those type things.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I don't really know if I can tell you what that's worth.
Put a number on that.
Right.
Wow. But so it's a coconut case.
Exactly,
yeah, that's a famous coconut case.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow, that's maybe you might be possibly the most entertaining CPA we've had in the studio.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So on a more serious note, I mean, tell our listeners, good examples were that. What are your areas of expertise, including the ones we mentioned? Maybe some other ones. Or you cover the whole spectrum? Or if someone were to call, what's an area that you would say, this is not something that's really in my wheelhouse? I'd refer you to someone else. Is there an area that?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, I have a broad spectrum that I work on there. There are probably certain situations that are too large for our firm.
So it's a case by case.
It is case by case. To follow what we've been talking about here, I mean, we've suggested the litigation aspect, but there is a lot that goes on just in the acquisition phase of people that might want to buy or sell a business. There's due diligence where somebody wants to check out and see if the numbers are actually what they are purported to be. So when I think about somebody that might call after hearing this broadcast, it would be a situation where, hey, I either want to sell my business, I want to buy a business. Can you help me with that process? Can you help me determine what I might want to pay or sell this business for? That's kind of what to think of me there. I mean, there are other areas we can advise on the tax area. I tend to like situations that are a little contentious. So if you got an IRS problem, call me.
Okay.
We'll try to figure out a way to get you out of that IRS problem as well.
You'll just launch a coconut at the IRS agent or whatever.
Yeah,
we have a coconut, a cannon. There you go. We just invented a new widget. Yeah, that's my topic, Kevin. I'm going to present that.
Session. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I'll vote for that.
The coconut cannon.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Excellent.
Repurposing the coconut.
Yeah. Okay. On that note, so we'll tell our listeners what's the best way to folks to get back in touch with you.
You can find me through our website, which is Callaway Gear. That's CallawayGear.com, or my telephone number is 404-304-0620, and it's Wheel Gear. Feel free to call me.
Awesome. Well, unbelievable show once again. Thanks to all our guests for joining us in the studio. And we'll see you next week on Buckhead Business Radio X.